Hey everyone, and welcome back to the Leadership Project with your host, Mick Spears. We bring you thought-provoking guests and topics every week to challenge your thinking about leadership. Our aim is to help you become the leader that you wish you always had as we learn together and lead together. Hey everyone, and welcome back to the Leadership Project. I'm greatly honored today to be joined by Christy Garcia. Christy is a leadership coach, a facilitator, and a speaker, and she's the founder of Mindful Choice Leadership Academy. And this mindful choice thing is going to be something that will definitely come up. She specializes in helping leaders with their self-awareness and management of ego. And that's going to be our key topic today. What is this thing called ego? Why does it get in our road? How do we struggle with it? And how can we best manage our ego to become a better leader? So I'm really interested to see where this conversation goes today. So without any further ado, Christy, I'd love it if you would please say hello to our audience. And I'd love to know a little bit about your background and what led you to be focused specifically on this concept of mindfulness, of self-awareness and ego.
Thanks for having me, Mick, and hello to everybody that's listening. I hope that I can add some value to your day and bring some wisdom to your own leadership. The ego. Yes, ego management. What brought me here? You know, it's a long story, as we all have our own ego. And I think I learned about mine before I felt I could create something and actually help others manage theirs. So I think where the interest of ego management came into place, I was in sales and recruiting for about 10 years in my career. And I started to realize the patterns of leadership. You know, really great people get promoted because of their individual contributions to the organization. And then once they get to leadership, they fail for 2, 3, 4 years because it's hard. It's a big mindset transition, as you know. You know, we go from I win, I got to be the best, I got to get promoted, I got to do this, I got to do that, and my way must be the best way, to now it doesn't matter what your way is, and it doesn't matter if you win, because if your team's not the finish line with you, there's no winning. And so really shifting that mindset to the we mindset. And I was trying to figure out where's the gap in the old leadership, you know, development model. And it was just, there were no humans involved, right? It was very task oriented, very skill oriented, competency oriented. And you never just talked about the people. So it was kind of this, you know, cookie cutter training world. This was 13 years ago. So, you know, leadership and development has changed dramatically in the last decade. And I think we've talked more to start focusing about the people, the human that is behind the leadership title, and realizing that if we don't support them as an individual and we just keep giving them these, you know, old school tactics or classic tactics, say, hey, you're a leader, you should do X, Y, and Z. It just doesn't work. And so, you know, the Leadership Academy came from a place of looking at it as every individual has their own need of becoming a better leader. You know, what is it that they need? Where do we meet them at, you know, where they're at now, without necessarily individual coaching, but having a model that allows people to recognize, this is where I'm at. These are my, you know, the current gifts. This is my current impact. And this is where I want to go. And so that's really where ego management became an interest to me. And I started building out a program that allowed people to recognize, you know, which ego is driving me. What is that unconscious mindset, beliefs, and behaviors, which is what I refer to as the ego, something that lives in every single one of us. 99% of the time, we're unconsciously going through emotions, which means the ego is unconsciously making your decisions 99% of the time. So being able to just identify those, learn what it is, and be more intentional as a leader allows you to show up and be more successful, communicate more effectively, maximize your impact, align your team members, get everybody to the finish line quicker and easier.
Really interesting, Christy, and there's already a lot to unpack there. I would like to talk about that tricky transition that you spoke about. That's exactly why we set up this podcast in the first place, was the roller coaster of emotions that a first-time leader goes through, that they have been usually an individual contributor that has been at the top of their craft. They've been a great software engineer, great nurse, great accountant, whatever the case may be. They get that tap on the shoulder and say, congratulations, you're a leader. But then it's the now, what am I going to do with that? So they have the euphoric highs of being recognized, and then the thud of anxiety when they realize that no one has shown them what it takes to be a leader. So there is that tricky period. And you said 2 to 3 years, sometimes it can be longer, that awareness period of realizing that what got them to where they are is not going to serve them and get them to where they want to go now. Why do you think that transition is so tricky?
there's a few things, but I think the biggest reality check is one, the ego is what drives us typically to get that promotion, right? It drives us to win. It drives us to be the best. It drives us for success our whole life. I mean, whether we're trying to get an A on a test, whether we're trying to be the superstar on the sports field, whether we're trying to, you know, be the top of our class in college, like whatever it is, that ego is what's driving us to succeed. Then we start getting into our career and we're building and we're growing. And again, that ego is pushing us to be successful. And so the ego is driven by I take care of me first. Not saying that we're not kind and we can't be loving and we can't be thoughtful in that arena, but I take care of me first is where that ego makes us successful in our younger years. Unfortunately, what happens is as we become more successful, we start getting into partnerships, into leadership roles, into relationships personally and professionally, that I really is no longer as dominant, right? You now have to shift into that we. And so when leaders get pushed into their leadership role for the first time, or even just a higher level, I think the ego follows us no matter what. But in that first line of leadership, there is that euphoric, like, wow, I did it. I'm awesome. But now imposter kicks in, right? Like, okay, I did it, but do I deserve this? And now I have to prove myself. So they start driving themselves even harder typically, and they start becoming even more over controlling or more dominant or more aggressive, or they do the opposite. They shut down and they start to be more passive. Like, I just got to get my team to like me. I can't hold them accountable. I'll hurt their feelings, right? And so depending on which their ego type is, they fall into those ego traps that start to then hold them back. They might've been the tools and the skills that got them to the success of this leadership role. But once they get to that role, those tools truly were designed for individual success. And until they start to shift and become aware of their tone of voice, their body language, their mindsets, their beliefs around delegation and developing others. You know, a lot of times the ego doesn't want to give away our skills and our success gifts because then we have competition and I no longer have value or worth. So as an individual computer or contributor who is successful, who now is a leader who has to make a lot of successful individuals, you have to be willing to forfeit a lot of the things that your ego has once told you was your safety net. This is what made you valuable. This is what made you important. And so until you can kind of become aware of one, the belief systems, but two, recognize the fears of the imposter and that ghost you're chasing to prove yourself that you're worth it. You have to learn to manage up and down. And a lot of times that first line manager only manages up. They just want to get the boss to notice them, which typically means they struggle with their team members. And the only way your boss is going to notice you if you get those team members elevated, right? And so it's that battle, that internal battle they face.
Yeah. All right. So lots there to go through. I want to unpack it almost one at a time. So I'm going to feel like part of it is about celebrate and reward, right? So when they were an individual contributor, they were applauded and it felt really good, probably dopamine releases in the brain of, oh, I'm on stage, I'm getting an award, it's all about me. And then there's a discovery one day that it's not about you anymore. It's not about you anymore. So, and that can be really challenging. So the things that you used to get celebrated and rewarded for now are the same things that are going to hold you back. They're going to become limiting beliefs or challenges in your ability as a leader and to inspire those around you. In fact, you're going to leave the team behind you and you're not going to reach the levels that you went. And then I'm hearing a spiral, in fact. I'd love to play this past year, Christy, because then you spoke about imposter syndrome starting to second guess themselves. And once they start second guessing themselves, needing to use your words, prove themselves. And depending on whether they go with a mindset shift to it's not about me anymore, or they stick in the it's all about me mindset, that could be a spiral that actually goes down and down and down because they're trying to prove themselves every day. And everything they're doing to prove themselves is digging themselves deeper into that hole. How does that sit with you?
Absolutely. I think that's the sabotaging tactic of the ego. You know, those unconscious behaviors are absolutely a downward spiral. And typically when we get into that spiral, unless we're conscious enough to catch ourselves, you just keep going down and you spin faster and faster and faster. And it either becomes, you know, the paralysis of, so there's three egos that I refer to. And depending on which ego type you are, it could be the controller ego over controls to fill in control. So that downward spiral could be over micromanagement, over controlling, over aggressive, higher expectations that are unrealistic, right? And so it goes into that place. The complier ego could go into a place of, you know what, I'm just going to let everybody do what they want because the controlling wasn't working. So I'm just going to let go of all control and say, you know what, it's on you guys. and, you know, forfeit any kind of boundary, any expectation, any accountability. And so they kind of just shut off that way, but they have all the friends. Their team loves them because my boss is cool. Yeah, this is fun. But there's no real success attached to it. And then you've got the protector, depending if they have a, you know, secondary of a controller or complier, they can come across as very intense, very direct, very black and white, very high stress, non-emotional, unrelatable. And so, you know, knowing who you're dealing with in these roles can really help these managers succeed quicker and find the strength in their ego. You know, I was just talking to a client. The goal is not to get rid of the ego. The goal is to manage the ego because the ego is part of us. It's both our strengths and our weaknesses. It got us the success we have. Now we have to learn to use it in this new season of life, in this new chapter, to actually help us get to the next level. And with that just becomes management. So it's about ego management, not, you know, killing the ego or, you know, making the ego disappear. So really using it in our power, using it in our favor so we can be our best self and lead from a place of balance.
So I'm hearing this balance there in between deep micromanagement through to almost abandonment, or maybe that's not the right word, but it's certainly abdication, like abdicating and going, oh, you know, backing right off. And it might take a while to fix that pendulum between control, command and control, micromanagement, etc., all the way through over. There's at least two questions that I want to ask there, but I'll start one at a time. I'm going to put it to you. Do you think it's even more difficult for that leader to make that transition the better they were at their job? Like, so if they were amazing, the best, I'll use that software engineer analogy again, the best software engineer that the company's ever seen, right? So incredibly talented. Do you think it's even more difficult for them to make the transition than someone that was good at their job, but not superstar?
That's an interesting question. I think personally that it doesn't matter how good they were at their job. I think it's the ego and motivator that made them good at their job that's going to depend on how they're able to shift. Controllers and protectors, they all have their own strengths and weaknesses, right? And if they're on the controller protector side, they typically have a stronger sense of worth and value as far as like, I'm great at my job. I do it best. Do it my way. Do it, you know, or the highway. So that mindset is just as hard to change as the mindset of, I don't want to hold my team accountable because it's really uncomfortable and I don't want anybody to get upset at me, right? It's the same energy. It's the same tactic. They just look different and one's more aggressive and one's a little softer. But personally, it takes just as much effort and energy to change that mindset.
Yeah, nice answer. And you're touching on exactly what I was thinking. It's the my way or the highway kind of thing, that if they were particularly talented at their craft, that it may be more difficult to let go because they know how to do that task that they're giving you to, that they're kind of empowering you to get on with, or not empowering, maybe micromanaging you to get on with. For them to let go and to realize that, no, this person's going to do it their own way and different is not wrong as long as they get the job done. But I love what you're saying there. It's more about what was the motivation in the first place? What was motivating them to be good at that? And how can they then channel that same motivation, or I'm going to say in a positive way instead of a negative way? Because if it's given to a negative way, they might avoid challenging conversations. They might, like, if the glory of everyone liking them, let's pick on that one for a second. If they loved being an individual contributor and their fuel was the applause and, oh, that Christy, she's amazing. We all love Christy. She's cool. And now Christy is in a leadership role and she has to have a challenging conversation about performance with an individual. Christy may shirk that conversation because she wants everyone to still like her. How does that sit with you?
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, a lot of times what happens with those complier leaders is a lot of them do have complier controller in them. And so their motivator was to win and be the best, but the dominant was be the best and win to be liked. And so when they get into these leadership roles, a lot of times what happens is they don't want to hold people accountable. So they'll just work themselves ragged. They'll work long hours. They'll do all the extra work. They'll make sure everything is done to meet a certain standard so their boss still likes them, but they're not managing down at all. And so they're burnout, they're exhausted. And then eventually they get resentful towards their team members. Now everybody's lazy, no one's accountable, and it becomes all of their faults. So I think the biggest thing for, you know, the question you're asking is recognizing self-awareness around their leadership tactics and their belief systems. You know, what happens is no matter how successful you are as an individual contributor, if you get into a leadership role and these behaviors start to surface, these are unconscious behaviors. You know, so whenever we're talking to an executive or an HR director and they're telling me about their leadership qualities and the behaviors they're dealing with and how frustrating they are, I always remind them these are unconscious ego tactics. These are not conscious behaviors. No one is walking in the room and saying, you know what, I really want to be liked today. I'm going to make sure everybody in the room does X, Y, and Z to make sure I'm liked, right? That's unconscious. And so, or vice versa, I'm going to go in here and I'm going to manage everybody. I'm going to control this situation so it's done exactly how I want it. No one will outrightly say I micromanage, right? Usually it hurts people. When that truth comes out, it's like a hard sting, like, oh, I didn't know I did that. I thought everybody liked me. And so, you know, recognizing that, helping someone understand their ego and these unconscious behaviors really can change behavior drastically. I always tell people within 3 to 6 weeks, you start to see a shift when you start to point out someone's ego. Because once you know something, it's a lot harder to turn it off and say, oh, that doesn't really happen. But most of the times we don't address people that way. We either give them feedback that's too aggressive and it's coming from our own ego, so people don't hear it, or we give it in a way that's too sugar-coated. And again, they don't hear the severity of it, or it's not making sense, or they can't see it in real time. When you go from the ego standpoint and you just normalize these behaviors, everybody does it. If you fall into these categories, this is what it looks like. It is normal. It's okay. You're not a bad person. Now we know you do it. Let's change it. Let's figure out what the motivator is and let's figure out how to manage it so you can thrive sooner.
Yeah, excellent. So I'm hearing a lot about intrinsic motivation and that quite often it's subconscious. And unless you do either hold the mirror up to yourself or someone else helps you to see it, it may not surface itself. You may not be aware of the behaviors that are now extrinsic behaviors, but they are intrinsically driven. You may not even be aware of them. That's really quite interesting. I definitely want to come back to that one. The second part of my question, which we touched on there a little bit, is about wanting to be liked by their boss, right? So I'm going to throw something out there. As a leader myself, I know that when, let's say, a junior leader, a team leader, whatever the case may be, when they come to me and they're so proud of their team and they say, oh, boss, my team have done this. They've knocked it out of the park. I'm so proud of them. They're brilliant. I'm sitting there privately applauding them, whether they know it or not. And I do try to bring it to their attention. Thank you for your leadership. So thank you for bringing to my attention your team's success. But thank you for your leadership. You created the environment where they were able to do that. But one of the challenges, one of the limiting beliefs that prevents them from doing that is they think that if they come to their boss and say, hey, boss, my team were amazing, they did this, but there's no credit for them in there. Now, I'm trying to say that senior leaders do not look at it that way. They instantly see that it was you that created the environment for the success, right? So they know it's about you, that in your leadership style, you don't need to go and say, boss, I am amazing, I did this, I did that, because your team are going to hate you first of all, and your boss is going to cringe, right? So how do we get people past that limiting belief of when they go to senior management that they should be talking about their team and not themselves?
Well, so that's an ego tactic. You know, I love that you brought this one up, and there is two sides of it, right? There's the ego that takes no credit, and then there's the ego that takes all the credit. And so, you know, where we're leading from our best self is when we use all three egos and we balance it out. And so you know how to be confident in the value you're bringing to the table so you don't have that imposter syndrome. So you're not always chasing the ghost. You don't have to always prove yourself, and you just know your worth. Like, yeah, I was really good at motivating my team. I held them accountable. We aligned, we communicated effectively. Everybody was on the same page, right? That is leadership. Now, with that being said, being able to recognize that you can't do what you do without everybody on your team doing it too, right? And so making sure that there's a balance there, that's really the value when you can see both sides of that model, having confidence in yourself while also being able to have confidence and brag about your team because they're doing a kick-ass job. And so that's what's really fun. When you start to manage the egos, you start to manage back that need to prove yourself, or that other opposite one that's just like, I ain't going to take the credit because I don't believe that I was good enough. I could have done better. And so recognizing where is that ego holding someone back? And really the easiest way to do that, again, you know, whether you do the ego training itself or really just helping people recognize, you know, what is your value and worth, and having that conversation What are the skills you bring to the table? You know, reflecting after big projects, you know, great questions for the executive or the higher level leader to ask in that moment is, what did you do to get your team to the finish line? How did you support them? You know, so you're not telling them you did a great job and your leadership was awesome. You're letting them tell you, and then you get to praise them, right? And so a lot of times when we just tell someone, you know, how great they're doing, they can shut off and they can push it aside. Now, some people really struggle with what they did. They don't really know, because again, that's a conscious action. And a lot of us are just unconsciously going through the motions. And so if they're like, oh, I just let them do their thing and they did a really great job. That's when the leader can come and say, well, this is what I noticed you did, and to help point it out so that they can do more of it.
Yeah, I love that. And I love that it's going to turn into a learning moment right there and a growth moment as well, positive or negative, whichever way it goes. So by asking the question, oh, so what was it that you did that got this great result from your team? And it might surprise them the first time they hear it, but they have to stop and reflect and think, yeah, what did I do? Oh yeah, I did. I did empower them. I did create the environment where they could do this work and all of this kind of stuff. And it might even be, and what did you learn about yourself? And what did you learn about your team? And what would you do differently next time? It's just to get those juices going. And if they don't do that reflection, they won't get the full benefit of the lesson. So that next time the same project comes up, will they do it the same way or will they do a little tweak? Right. So yeah, really good. Love that question. Okay. So we've danced around this a little bit through at different times, but you've spoken about three types of ego. I'd like to codify that right now so it's a good, clean takeaway for people in the audience. What do you mean by three types of ego?
Yeah. So at Mindful Choice, we talk ego management. So the first thing we do is we identify which egos are in the room. We all have 1 to 2 dominant egos, and we've bucketed them into 3 categories. There is the complier ego, controller ego, and then the protector ego. The complier ego is motivated by being liked. And so its value is, you know, taking care of people. It's super caring and thoughtful and a good team player, anything that's associated with people, people first, task second. Unfortunately, the downside of the complier ego is that it can overgive. It can avoid conflict. It struggles to speak truth in a difficult, you know, situation. They go along to get along, so they don't want to rock the boat. So there can be some passiveness in there. Unfortunately, what happens with the complier is, you know, they'll give until they can't anymore. Then they explode and they've got resentment, and all this buildup could be 3, 4, 5, 6 months where they've take, and now they just can't take anymore. And so they explode all the stuff that's happened, and everybody's like, whoa, what just happened? And you lost everybody. They just think you're the crazy person now yelling because they're not sure what you're yelling about. So that's typically the pattern of the complier ego. Good intentions, people driven. The protector is the one in the center of, you know, the chart. And when we look at the protector, it is where our values live. It's where our authentic confidence, our courageous truth, where we have the ability to speak up even when it's difficult and do what's right for others, even if it's, you know, not what everybody is wanting to happen. And so making sure that it's balanced. They love facts, they love logic, they love reasoning, and then they make choices and decisions based on what is right for everybody involved. Unfortunately, what happens, because we're dealing with values and strong, you know, ethics and integrity, that can tend to be get into the black and white zone. And so worth and value comes from being right. And so if they're not right, they have no worth, which means a lot of times they can come across as confrontational if they're questioning if they did the right thing. If they messed up, they might, you know, be more combative versus, you know, listening and hearing what went wrong. And so there could be a lot of confrontation in this communication style. They can be very aggressive or very passive. So they can be very loud and in your face around what is, you know, their opinion, or they can be very passive and come across as just kind of arrogant, but the silent arrogant at the room, looking down on people. And so again, knowing the balance there, because that is where, again, our authentic confidence and our integrity live. And then you've got the controller. The controller is motivated by being the best and winning. And so lots of drive, lots of ambition, you know, high standards, always learning, wants to grow, wants to be better. Unfortunately, with that motivation, it comes with a lot of, you know, they're quick thinkers. And so my way or the highway, freight train energy, get on the bus or get off. Lots of motivation and inspiration lives in the controller ego. So people want to follow that energy. Unfortunately, sometimes that energy moves too fast. So we leave people behind. And that's typically what happens, is we either start to micromanage or we just, you know, give up on people too soon. And so we end up at the finish line by ourselves.
All right. So really interesting, Chrissy. I'm going to throw something to the audience here. This is your first kind of call to action here. So I'm sure that you're listening to this. You're listening to Chrissy. going to put it out there and say that you're listening to this thing. You're listening to Complier, Protector, and Controller. And I'm going to hazard a guess that at least part of your mind jumped to, I know someone like that. Ah, oh, I know. Christy's talking about Jim, or Christy's talking about Sukjit, or whoever it is that in your team, you probably just externalized what Christy was saying. Here's my challenge. I want you to look in the mirror, not outwards. I want you to look in the mirror and go, and you heard Christy say, there's probably one to two of those egos that are dominant with you. Complier, protector, controller. I want you to look in the mirror and go, I wonder where I fit on that spectrum. Which are my dominant egos, not just externalize it. Now, help us out here, Christy. We mentioned that a lot of this is intrinsic motivation. It's subconscious. How do we bring the subconscious to the conscious?
Yeah, and that's the hard part. You know, a lot of times I'll have people say, oh, we don't need to do the assessment. We'll just, you know, do it on our own. Well, the reality is this is very unconscious behaviors. You know, most likely your listeners are at least in their late 20s in this leadership role. Every now and then you might have a younger leader, but you've lived some life, which means this ego has been with you for a very long time. It gets very smart and it knows how to outsmart you so that it sticks around. And so when you can start to ask people around you, how do I make you feel in this situation? Or you start to pay attention. Do I get on my soapbox during meetings? Am I one to let other people talk? Am I one that tells people exactly what to do? Or do I listen and help, you know, offer more insight? A lot of times we buy our own press though. So it doesn't matter how much you sit there and say, well, do I do this or not do this? If someone doesn't point it out, very rarely will you ever recognize some of these ego tactics, because most of the time, until we come conscious, we don't even know that that happened. And a lot of times we black this stuff out. So when someone does bring it to our attention, like, oh, you were a real jerk last week, sometimes we'll know, but sometimes the ego will write it off. Well, they were a jerk first and we justify it, right? And so being able to really be honest with yourself, where are you consistently running into problems? Are you finding that there's a lot of drama around you? You know, one of the number one things I hear is, oh, I hate drama. Well, drama is the ego's best friend. It thrives in drama. And whether you think of drama as gossiping in the break room, that's one type of drama. Another type of drama is ignoring the gossip in the break room and you overlooking it or not addressing it as a leader, right? That's another type of drama because you're letting drama now surround you and you're ignoring it. Then there's another type of drama where we just act like it's not happening and we completely diminish it and we act like, whatever, there's no humans. We got tasks to keep moving forward. We don't need to have emotions around this, right? And so those are all ego tactics all around drama, but your approach to it can create more drama on the team. My boss doesn't care about me. He's aloof. They don't really matter. Or he's right in the mix of it and he's now a culprit of the drama, right? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And there's two interesting things that came up for me there. The first one was that your ego learns to outsmart even yourself. So even if you are self-aware of it, unless you're careful here, it just outsmarts you anyway. That's really interesting because it's been with you for a very long time. And then when you started talking about this drama, I mentioned the word dopamine earlier, but I started thinking about that, about dopamine releases in the brain, that part of you is saying, I don't like that drama, but in other respects, your ego is getting fueled in there because you might be the person that fixes the problem. And then that feels good, right? So there is a drama. The drama might then become fueled. It gets kind of dramatized. But then if you're the hero that fixes it, now your ego feels good about itself again and goes, oh, I fix dramas. Now I'm hearing a pattern. Sorry, Christy, my mind.
Yeah, you just went down.
My mind just went to this part where your subconscious ego is now purposely starting fires so you can be the one that puts the fire out and get the credit. I'm sorry, that's where I went, but that may not be the same for everyone. But these behaviors, are they almost a perpetual motion machine where your ego takes over? Tell me what you think of that.
Absolutely. And I think that's what happens 95% of the time in human interactions, right? What you're talking about is as simple as someone writes an email. If a protector writes an email, it's going to be short and blank, or short and sweet, maybe not sweet, just short, short to the point. It's going to have maybe one or two sentences. Hey, I need this by this date. Have a good day. I probably wouldn't have a good day. Be like, John, I need this. Get it to me when it's done. Sally. And John, if he's a complier, he'd be like, wow, Sally's a real jerk. She's so bossy. She doesn't tell me anything. And all she wants is she just demands stuff all the time, right? So that's how she perceived that. That was not the intention at all, but it goes back to perception and intention is really what happens here is when an ego delivers on their perception, creates an impact based on someone else's perception. And now you've got this cycle of drama that happens. So now Sally's kind of rolling around the office, or John's rolling around the office, super annoyed at Sally because Sally's short and doesn't have any respect for his time or whatever, right? Whatever story one tells when their boss bosses them around. Or maybe that's not even his boss. Maybe it's his colleague. And so now you've got resentment there. Sally has no idea this is even happening because she's just going through her to-do list, just making that stuff happen, checking her emails, doing her thing, right? Well, really, all we needed to do, if Sally would have said, hey, John, I need this done by X day. Can you get it back to me? Have a good day. Just those two intros could have made such a difference for that complier to receive it and not ego respond to it. Does that make sense? And so that's where that sabotaging drama happens. Most of it is very unconscious. Most of it's very unintentional, but it happens. And that goes back to that self-awareness component. If we're not aware, if someone externally doesn't tell us our impact, it's really hard to change that impact because we don't even know that's how it's coming across. And so that's where third party or, you know, the higher up in leadership you go, having a coach, having someone that will just be honest with you. Because the higher in leadership you go, the less people are willing to tell you the truth. And working with people, whether it's a coach, whether it's a mentor, whether it's a colleague, that will sit down and say, hey, you know, Mick, these are some of the tactics you're using on the team and it's not working. And you might want to get defensive. You might want to be a jerk about it, but recognizing that's your ego and having someone that's conscious enough to say, I get it. It hurts. That stings. But wouldn't you rather know? Because this is the impact you're creating and this is the impact it's going to have on your team's success. Now you have interest and you have motivation to change that thing. And you can now silence the ego so your best self hears it. When we give feedback and it's coming from one ego to another, there's no responding to that. You just start to pick and be like, oh, whatever. He just is using that because he got mad at me because I did this one thing, you know, and that's an ego's response to feedback. Or, well, it was just that one time. I don't normally do it like that. And we start to make excuses to justify our behavior versus saying, wow, that wasn't my intention. This is how, you know, what my intention was. And now someone say, oh, well, if that was your intention, just do X, Y, Z, and that would have landed. Right. And so it becomes an informative discussion versus a accusation of, you know, my ego thinks your ego is bad and we're just going to have a tiff over it.
The words that are coming into my mind right now, Christy, are, and this is going to take a little while, so bear with me for a bit. It's clash of egos. And I'm hearing a clash of egos that could be subsurface or a clash of egos that could be on the surface. And bear with me for a second. So I do fit into the category of writing emails of, you know, hi, Christy, how are you doing today? How was your weekend? I hope the kids are great, blah, 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 blah. Would love to have a meeting with you this week about topic X. What time can we fit it in? Have a great day. Cheers, Mick. Now that's me. Now the way that I rationalize that is that it's from a place of genuine care, but listening to you, it could be my complier ego taking over, right? Potentially.
Yes, and I want to make sure we justify our ego is both our strength and our weakness, right? So there is 33% value in that human genuine care, right? Yes.
But where I come with the clash of egos or the and here, where I come with the clash of egos, there's going to be some people that receive that email and go, oh, Mick, oh, that's lovely. And yeah, I had a great day. And others are going to be going, just get to the point.
Right. But they won't read it at all because it's too long.
Yeah, right. It's too long.
Uh-huh, absolutely.
And all this kind of stuff. And same in reverse. Now, if there's a protector ego or a controller ego that is writing the poof email, there's going to be people that receive that and go, whoa, this person doesn't value me. They don't see me. They don't listen to me. They don't care about me. You know, all of this kind of stuff. So I'm hearing this kind of clash of egos. So what I'm curious about here, Christy, is about subsurface clash of egos. So let's say that someone has said some throwaway sentence in a meeting and the person on the receiving end then thinks about that for 3 days, for 5 days, for 7 days. They can't let go of it. And the person that said that sentence that offended them, their next thought is, oh, what are we having for lunch today? And the conversation is immediately forgotten for them. And yet the other person's hanging on to it for days or even a week. How dangerous is that? And how do we address that kind of subconscious or subsurface clash of egos?
That's such a good question, because I think that's what's happening, you know, 95% of the time in our conversations. We don't realize that we're triggering someone else because, again, there's other egos in the room. And one thing we have to be careful of, we're not responsible for other people's ego, right? And so a lot of times we want to take ownership and take blame of a situation. And the reality is we can only take ownership of our part. One of the things that I talk about, ego management, the three ways to manage it. One, you have to be self-aware. Now, there's self-awareness to know your perception. Like when I'm talking in a room of people or even just one-on-one, recognizing the other person's body language, understanding when someone shuts down, maybe noticing when they back up and it's like, that's not what you intended or you thought would happen, but not calling that out, right? And just ignoring it. Most likely there was some visual sign or visceral feeling that shifted in the room when someone got triggered, when that individual got triggered. The speaker didn't recognize it, right? Because they weren't conscious enough to even pay attention to that. So that's their ego's problem. With that being said, I think this is why it's really important to make sure that we are recognizing not only our own ego, but also the egos in the room, because you can tailor language to fit the different egos in the room. You can tailor language to recognize, you know, this topic is most likely going to affect these three people that are in the room because they're people first, and this is a task-oriented topic. And so again, there's that component. The other component is being able to call out those little elephants as they show up and knowing, you know, if something doesn't feel good, it's not just the speaker's responsibility to say, wow, I just noticed I triggered the room. It's making sure that everybody in the room is empowered to recognize when they're triggered. Because, you know, it goes back to, if we don't know what someone else is thinking, we can't possibly change what we've said or what we've done because we don't even know that it was wrong. And so it's that external approach that we all have to take. And if you're sitting in a room with people, one, being approachable enough for someone to feel that they can trust you to say, hey, that doesn't sit well. But two, also knowing as a leader to give people permission. Hey, does that not sit well with anybody? How can we have this conversation? Because there are two different ego types. One is going to fester on that for months at a time, and they're just never going to talk about it. The other one's like, oh, we said it. We had a hash out about it. I thought we moved on from it. Right? Like the protector loves confrontation. That's how they thrive in like debating things and having intense conversations. Controllers, they don't even know they're being intense because that's just how they communicate because there's a lot of passion and drive behind their communication. And so, you know, if you hear something that's triggering, most likely it's unintentional. And that's where if we can start to put ego language into a space of a team, you can really start to diffuse some of those miscommunications that are just natural human behaviors that are really, really unintentional, but they can make wounds. They can build resentment and then ultimately lead to people leaving a job because they thought someone was intentionally trying to hurt their feelings. And really that wasn't the case.
All right. So we're hearing elements of awareness. We're hearing elements of speak up, and I'm hoping the psychological safety that will allow people to do so. The interesting thing you said was ego language. Can you give us some examples of what you mean by ego language?
Yeah. So when we're talking into a room, making sure, you know, compliers, they're people driven. So making sure whatever you're talking about, the topic takes care of the people. It's considering the people involved. Why does this matter to the people? How is this going to impact the people? Typically, that's where your compliers are going to perk up. They want to hear that. Now, they might not like it, and you still might trigger an ego, but at least they're hearing like, okay, that first question is answered. Second, for the protectors is they want to know the facts. Give me the facts, the logic, the reasoning behind this. Why are we doing this? And why does it make sense? And it's not just an opinion. And so giving them more of the, you know, ultimate logic that goes with the decision. And then you've got the controllers. Tell me how we're going to all win and be the best. How are we getting to the finish line? Why does this make sense? And how are we doing to do it the fastest? And so if you can touch on those three components when you're talking to a group of people, or know which ego is in front of you and make sure you talk on that point, then you can typically start to diffuse some of the initial confrontation or judgments or, you know, things that typically arise when someone says something about a new plan or a new project or whatever the thing may be, right? And I think that's where just having a conscious enough intention around the words you use will have you be more ego managed in that moment than if you didn't go in with that conscious thought.
Yeah, really loving it, Christy. It sounds like a very intentional act. And if think about almost, I'm going to talk about a presentation now, but we can juxtapose this over into any type of meeting. It can be a workshop or anything. And it's know your audience. And now beyond knowing your audience, it's knowing what egos are in the room. What egos do we have in room? Do we have compliers? Do we have protectors? Do we have controllers? And in our agenda, in our message, in our meeting, are we covering what those three egos need? And you might have a mixed bag of them in the room. And as long as you touch on those characteristics that you just spoke about, Christy, everyone's going to walk away going, yeah, I get it. I get it. I'm on board here. How does that sit with you?
Be aligned for sure. You may not have everybody on board. That might be an overpromise, but you can at least have better alignment or awareness of where everyone stands. And I think that's at least allows new conversation to be had. You know, a lot of times we just assume people are on the same page and we're good. Let's move on. And no one's on the same page.
Yeah, cool. All right. So that's our second call to action today, team. Think about meetings that you run, presentations that you give, etc. think about your audience, think about the egos in the room, and have we covered the bases for our three different egos, our compliers, our protectors, and our controllers? Really love it, Christy. Come back to clash of egos, then there's going to be times where there is a surfaced clash of egos in the room. And let's give a different scenario now. Let's say, so you might be the senior leader in the room and you've got a room full of junior leaders and you've got a protector and a controller that are going at each other, or a controller and a complier that are not seeing eye to eye. What do you do in overt clash of egos when it's on the surface in front of everyone to see?
That's actually the easiest one to manage. One, because if we see it, we can call it out, right? It's usually the unspoken ones that are a lot harder to acknowledge. So when you start seeing that, one, your message didn't land, or two, a verbal or physical, like obvious confrontation going on, that's when you just pause. We need a timeout and let's talk about this, right? I mean, you just have to stop. Someone has to be courageous enough to say, we're not aligned. We're on the same team. And right now we're not acting like it. Let's talk and let's create the outcome. You know, the easiest way in those situations, most of the time people want the same thing. They're arguing about how to make that happen, right? Especially when you think about team members looking at how we're going to accomplish a project or achieve the next sales goal. Most likely the outcome is the same. We all want to win this outcome. And the problem is everybody has a different way of doing that, right? And so you get stuck and you get the arguments start to happen when we say, well, let's do it this way. And it usually is my way. And so when you can start to put a pause on that and say, okay, what's the outcome we want to get, and realign everybody around the outcome. And then from there, with solid alignment, now you can go back to the hows. Okay, well, how do we do that? And what really matters? Does it matter if we all do it this way? Or does it matter if we just get to this finish line? And these are the three expectations that need to be met during that process, right? And so again, I think a lot of times the ego kicks in, we get confrontation because someone's feeling like, oh, you judge my opinion, or you're telling me I'm not worthy. And we're now fighting over it in front of everybody. Being able to have someone courageous enough to say, stop, let's realign, focus on outcome, get back on the same team. Typically, you can stop an ego's action like that and pretty efficiently, pretty quickly, as long as someone stays grounded and it doesn't become personal. It's not a personal attack. You're not going in and taking sides. It's purely neutral, saying, we're on the same side. Both of you clearly are upset about this. Let's talk about, one, why are we upset? And without accusing, what's your ownership of your part? And why are you upset over this? What would you like to happen? And then giving people the permission to then say, okay, how do we make it happen as a team? Going back to that we versus I.
Yeah, I love it, Christy. And really good. You got to bring the conversation to the surface and then you can talk about it. I love that term that you use. Okay, pause. Hang on a second. We're not aligned here. What just happened? What are we trying to achieve? How can we get there? And what are the different methods? Really love it. And it was very respectful. It wasn't one's right, one's wrong. It's like, how do we get this back on track, team? So yeah, really good, Christy.
Absolutely. And I'll clarify for your listeners, because if someone, you know, this happens every day in every single conversation we have, there's some level of ego getting triggered. And if someone is just conscious enough to say, hey, it looks like this got, you know, this is upsetting you, or it looks like this might have hit you the wrong way, or maybe my message got lost, this wasn't my intention, but I feel like something's not aligned, right? And just someone calling that energy change out when we're having a conversation with a team member or a family member, and we see the energy shift, instead of ignoring that, which is what 95% of the time we do, stopping and just saying, something happened and that wasn't my expectation of this conversation. Can we back up and figure out what just happened here? And just that calls out egos. That gets everybody back to their best self. You might get someone, you know, whose ego responds to you, but if you're conscious enough to say, oh, that wasn't my intention, I'm really sorry that it came across that way. Like, again, now you've managed their ego and they say, oh, okay, well, this is what it did to me. And this is where we need to go with it.
Yeah. And I'm loving this word trigger. It's recognized that someone has been triggered, their ego has been triggered, and then what we do about it. All right, Christy, there's been some amazing takeaways today. I'm going to bookend it a little bit. And I'm going to say that there's two key things for me, right? So the first thing is the recognition of the three egos, complier, protector, and controller. And my first challenge, put the mirror up to yourself first and think about which of your egos are dominant. And as Christy said, there might be one to two of them that are more dominant than the others. Okay. Then the second one is you live in a world where there's lots of other people and those people also have dominant egos. And being aware of the different egos in the room is going to raise your leadership. So start with self-awareness, then start with having your antenna up and looking around you and understanding that those egos are there. And those egos are going to drive behavior, whether you you like it or not, whether they like it or not, it's their ego that is subconsciously influencing the way that they show up, the way that they act, and the way that they interact with other human beings. So if you think about that as your takeaway for today, complier, protector, controller, where do I fit? Where do others around me fit? And how do we best manage that in our leadership situations? You'll walk away from today's conversation with some really interesting things to go away and dig into and see how it can show up in your own leadership style and also the leadership styles of those that you might be coaching or helping around you. So thank you so much, Christy. Really love today's conversation. I feel richer for having it. I know the audience would as well. I would love to go now to our rapid round. So these are the same four questions that we ask all of our guests. All right. So first of all, what's the one thing you know now that you wish you knew when you were 20?
Oh, man. One thing I know now that I wish, nothing's personal. Yeah. I think, that's the number one thing that triggers ego is we make things personal. Nothing is personal unless we make it personal.
Love it. All right. What's your favorite book?
There's so many. Let's see. I think the most common books that I recommend to my clients are Eckhart Tolle's Power of Now, How to Stay Present Under Pressure and Stress. And then the other one is anything that's written by Brené Brown, but I really love her, The Power of Vulnerability. You know, I think that is a book that is life-changing, especially for anybody that's a controller ego or emotionally unavailable. It really helps strengthen what vulnerability is, and it doesn't make it the weak emotion that sometimes, you know, the controller protector ego can create. Here's our power.
Brilliant. What's your favorite quote?
Oh, there's so many quotes. This one caught me off guard. I'm not going to lie. Let's see. I would say the one that is coming out, I can't even remember who says it, but never be afraid to ask questions. You can only learn from the answers. So, you know, I think, again, ego hates new information. It hates truth. So the more curious you can be, the more powerful your leadership can be.
Yeah, very good. That's a really good one. Like, curiosity is what can park your ego. Stay curious. Stay curious for longer and you might learn something. You might learn something about yourself. You might learn something about others. You might learn something about your craft. Yeah, so stay curious longer. Love it. And finally, I'm sure people are going to be blown away by this concept today, Christy, and they'd love to know more. How do people find you if they'd like to either engage your services or study more, whatever the case may be?
They can find me on LinkedIn, Christy Garcia, or the Mindful Choice Leadership Academy. They can go to my website, mindfulchoiceacademy.com. And yeah, reach out. I'd love to hear from you. I'm on Instagram, Facebook, all the good things. But yeah, I would say LinkedIn or my website is going to be your go-tos.
Outstanding. And we'll put the links in the show notes as well. Makes it easier for people to find that. So thank you so much, Christy. I really love today's conversation. Thank you for your time and the value that you've brought to our audience today.
Thank you, Mick, for having me. It was a pleasure visiting with you. It was an honor to talk to your guests or your audience and to share some of this wonderful gift of ego management.
Thank you for listening to The Leadership Project at mickspears.com. A huge call out to Farah Sadek for his video editing of all of our video content and to all of the team at TLP. Joanne Goes On, Gerald Calabo, and my amazing wife, Say Spears. I could not do this show without you. Don't forget to subscribe to the Leadership Project YouTube channel where we bring you interesting videos each and every week. And you can follow us on social, particularly on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Instagram. Now, in the meantime, please do take care, look out for each other, and join us on this journey as we learn together and lead together.